Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, July 5th, 2020. Section A. Oil, coronavirus, just part of the tale that has been 2020. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. Last week marked the halfway point of the year. 2020 already has been a year for the history books. Negative oil and coronavirus have made the biggest headlines, but there have been plenty more chapters. A quick trip down memory lane offers headlines such as the death of Clayton Williams, one of the great wildcatters, a San Angelo man taking on all comers to win the Republican nomination for Congress, a new sheriff in town, and the hospital district reaching out to the community for a little help. Midlanders saw a new mayor take the oath of office, a change in the county's election office, and a downtown hotel deal and Costco project put on hold. And on the education front, there was an extended spring break. There weren't any formal graduation ceremonies, there weren't any spring sports action, and there was controversy over scheduling. The following is more of the year that has been. Negative oil. On April 20th, the price of oil went to where it never has been before, to negative town. The price closed on Monday at a negative $37.63. It was a perfect metaphor for what has been 2020 to forget. It was not going to be an ideal 2020 in the oil patch, but coronavirus made it so much worse. Scott Sheffield said in May that the current price downturn reminded him of 1986, and the actions of larger corporations threatened the future existence of independent companies. And while the price rebounded to around $40 a barrel, there were still layoffs by the thousands and a drop in the nation's rig count to record lows. The numbers heading into the second half of the year show 317 rigs stacked year over year and 125 rigs still active in the Permian. Coronavirus spike. What seemed like a non-event in Midland for around 2.5 months changed after Memorial Day. The number of confirmed coronavirus cases went from 129 to 772 in a little more than 1 month. 15 people have died since the pandemic started, and a community has been divided over issues having to do with health, freedoms, government intrusion, and wearing face coverings. Coronavirus isn't going anywhere, and judging by recent comments from Mayor Patrick Peyton, the fight between state and local control will continue well into the second half of the year, especially if strides aren't made statewide in flattening the coronavirus curve. COVID and education. Students across Midland left campuses in early March for spring break. They never returned. Midlanders experienced life with an extended spring break, enrichment material, lunch pickup, and Google Classroom. Virtual learning became part of the lexicon for students, teachers, and parents, and working from home gave many Midlanders a whole new appreciation for teachers. Hotspots and Wi-Fi replaced number 2 pencils and spiral notebooks as necessary supplies. Midland ISD has plans to offer a virtual learning opportunity, even if students can return to campus when the 2021 academic year begins. The school board set aside money in its 2021 budget for technology for students and teachers, and as much as $1 million will be used for COVID-related adjustments on its campuses. Protests at Midland Park Mall. More than 300 people came together on May 31st for one of the largest protests in Midland history during a Black Lives Matter rally on the grounds of Midland Park Mall. Midlanders joined other communities around the nation to protest the death of George Floyd, a Minneapolis man who died May 25th after a police officer knelt on his neck. Before the night was over, the protest spilled onto Midkiff Road. No injuries were reported and there weren't any arrests. A subsequent protest downtown ended with police and protesters coming together in prayer and, for some, in an embrace. The spirit of protest continued in June when it was announced that a petition to rename Robert E. Lee High School was created. As of Friday night, it had 8,665 supporters. Alumni telling the Reporter-Telegram of their support for renaming the high school include former NFL player and the president of the NFL Players Association, Eric Winston, and former Railroad Commissioner Michael Williams. Elections. Election has been a part of the vernacular and not always for the right reasons. In January, a judge signed an order that finalized the defeat of November's Midland ISD bond election. Elections Administrator Deborah Land, who oversaw the November election debacle that included a lost ballot box, resigned in March. Some headlines had to do with choices of the electorate. August Pfluger of San Angelo defeated a packed field during the March primary and won the Republican nomination for Mike Conaway's District 11 seat without having to go into a runoff. Also winning in March was David Kreiner, who defeated a smaller field and didn't have any problems avoiding a runoff. He was sworn in as Midland County Sheriff in April. Even as 2020 makes the turn to the back nine, Midland County residents are heading to the polls, deciding the fate of a quarter-cent sales tax addition for the hospital district. Republicans who are casting votes for a runoff for a district judge seat. We lost Clady. Clayton Williams, a true Wildcatter, passed away in February. He was a Hall of Fame oil man, a former Republican nominee for governor, a loyal graduate of Texas A&M, and larger-than-life figure in Midland and West Texas. His name lives on in the office complex he developed, Claydesta, located northwest of the intersection of Wadley Avenue and Big Spring Street. The complex was named for Williams and his wife, Modesta. Also one for the history books. The Midland City Council in May approved a $261,089 million contract with Fort Stockton Holdings on a water deal that will last through at least 2070. The deal involves partnering with the cities of San Angelo and Abilene to secure the water rights and then build the infrastructure, including a pipeline, for delivery of the water to the three cities. Midland Medical Lodge became ground zero in the early days of the coronavirus pandemic in Midland. Nearly 50 residents and more than a dozen staff members tested positive for coronavirus. 10 residents died from COVID-19 complications. A 21-year-old Midland man was arrested May 16th for evading arrest with a motor vehicle. The ensuing conversation regarding the arrest of Ty Anders packed a City of Midland Community Center and even brought Midland under the cable news spotlight when it came to race and policing. Midland Police Department footage showed an arrest scene that was different than what was shown on bystanders' footage posted on social media. A Midland County grand jury indicted Anders on the charge, a third-degree felony. And a Midland County grand jury also indicted a 19-year-old man involved in a racially motivated attack at Sam's Club on March 14th. Jose Gomez was indicted on 3 counts of attempted capital murder, 1 count of aggravated assault, and 2 counts of assault on a public servant from a separate incident. The 3 counts for attempted capital murder include Texas's version of a hate crime charge. Gomez is accused of stabbing an Asian family that he believed were Chinese and infecting people with the coronavirus. Peyton, executive fiat from Austin not needed at local level, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton's comments Friday continued a verbal attack on Governor Greg Abbott for a pattern of executive fiat over the entire state without legislative checks and balances. For the third time in a week, Peyton called out the governor for overly broad measures and action that conflicted with what Midland's mayor believes should take place at the local level. Moving forward, there must be local control and self-governance until the active engagement of the legislative branch of Texas if we are going to uphold the principles of self-governance, freedom, and democracy this country and state are founded upon. Principles not to be easily forgotten during a weekend in which we celebrate our historic independence, Peyton said in a statement Friday. In late June, when Abbott called for closing bars and reducing restaurant occupancy back to 50%, Peyton stated, "It is once again very difficult to abide by statewide mandates that apply broadly to the state, but with confusion on what is necessary and actionable at the local level. I believe we as a city are on the right course." When addressing a mask mandate on Wednesday, Peyton said, "In the midst of this panic associated with the unknown, we have demonstrated how easily we will succumb to the king when we cannot control something or do not feel like we are safe. In less than 1 week, the kings and queens in Washington, D.C., and even Austin shut the entire country down uniformly and, in some cases, unnecessarily. After the governor announced his latest measure, which called for face coverings to be worn in public across most of the state, in an attempt to stop the spread of coronavirus, Peyton responded that he was disappointed in the ongoing executive overreach of Governor Abbott to local matters dealing with community health. The mayor also said, until such a time when the Texas legislature finally engages this unprecedented season, we are at the local level are the only check and balance to statewide mandates being applied to a fluid and varied situation throughout a radically diverse state. Local control isn't the same as inaction on coronavirus. In March and April, Peyton, along with Midland City Council, put measures into place they believed were in the best interest of community health. In March, Peyton put in place a disaster order in response to the coronavirus pandemic. Gatherings for any event, common endeavor, or business operation were limited to 50 people or fewer, except for certain circumstances. The declaration allowed for exceptions in education arenas, government facilities, places of worship, hotels and motels, grocery stores, hospitals or shelters, among other places. In April, the mayor put into place a different disaster declaration that included measures that mandated social distancing, including limiting the number of customers equal to 10% of occupancy based on square footage. In late April, the mayor said the governor's plan to reopen the Texas economy mirrored the plan offered by West Texas mayors. At the time, he said there is a responsibility of Midland County residents to act in a way that doesn't harm themselves or their neighbors, and businesses should have every ability to operate in a manner they deem safe for their customers. A people living in a tyranny freely give their rights away to an empty promise of provision and protection, Peyton said Wednesday. Out here in West Texas, we still believe in the power of a free people, even when we can't see the enemy. Midlanders' input sought on city and its issues. UT's IC2 Institute survey to gauge impact of coronavirus by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Calling Midlanders of all shapes and sizes, ages, and race and economic standing, the IC2 Institute at the University of Texas at Austin wants your thoughts on Midland and its issues. An economic recovery task force was formed in April to respond to the economic impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. Communities across the state were called on to join the Regional Economic Recovery Project, and 70 community leaders have responded. The Midland Development Corp requested to be included, said Scott Winton, who was assigned the tall city as part of the project. Sarah Harris, Director of Operations and Chief Financial Officer with the MDC, told the Reporter-Telegram by email, the MDC fully supports the aims of the project. An essential aspect of gathering accurate data about the current economic downturn will be responses from community stakeholders, business owners, and entrepreneurs across Midland. We here at the MDC have promoted the data gathering process by sharing information and links to the survey on our social media platforms and in an email sent out to our subscriber list. Winton said he is hoping hundreds of Midlanders respond to the survey. I want it to be representative of the demographics of Midland. I want responses from every age, race, and economic standing. Questions relate not just to economic development, but also how the pandemic has impacted residents, and some questions are related to their personal values. Deadline for residents to take the survey is August the 7th. Winton said results will be presented to the city's leadership. In the next round, we will come to them with ideas on what the results mean and how to capitalize. Short-term may be dealing with COVID-19, but long-term will deal with Midland's prosperity and vibrancy. Winton said he has found Midlanders to have a higher degree of resiliency as they have ridden the ups and downs of the oil and gas economy. In the boom times, a lot of people move in. In the bust, a lot of people leave, but the ones who stay, stay because they love Midland and want to build a life here. That creates a greater sense of optimism, and that creates hope, which is a component of optimism. Winton said early last week he had received only 27 responses. One respondent said it's hard to diversify Midland's economy because it's hard on new industries to compete with the oil and gas wages. There may be some methods that create a physical environment people want to work in and forego high wages if they can't have an affordable lifestyle, he said. That needs to be a part of the dialogue. City. More than half of Midland's total cases come during last 2 weeks. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. This past week gave Midland County residents more of the same concerning coronavirus. The 209 cases confirmed last week weren't as many as the 241 during the previous week, but the week-over-week deficit is likely because cases were not announced on Friday, which was a holiday for the city. Still, more than half of the 772 confirmed cases in Midland County have been announced over the last 2 weeks, and healthcare leaders said July 4th holiday could be similar to the Memorial Day holiday when it comes to the weekend becoming a launching pad for new cases. Last week showed Midland County residents that young people again lead the way when it comes to new cases, 57 among 20 to 29. 52 among those 30 to 39, and 36 among those 40 to 49. What wasn't the same was information from the health department about source of exposure, community transmission, where the spread of an illness for which the source of infection is unknown, made up more than 50% of the cases during the week. The 108 community transmission cases pushed the total during the pandemic to 294. That total is second to contact to known cases, 342, since January 1st. The number of community transmission cases have increased by 281 cases.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, July 5th, 2020. OC and UTPB artists' work on display by Ruth Campbell. Several Odessa College photography students and faculty members have had their work accepted into the Texas Photographic Society exhibit. Kate Mahoney, Dave Thompson and Sonia Garcia Hopkins were all selected. The Listening to the Land exhibit may be seen from September 8th through November 22nd, the TPS website stated. University of Texas Permian Basin Director of Marketing for Athletics, Richard Acosta, also had work accepted. Additionally, Odessa College art and photography students and faculty have had work accepted in the 62nd Annual Permian Basin Juried Art Exhibition, 2020 Insight at the Ellen Knoll Art Museum. This year marks the 62nd Annual Permian Basin Juried Art Exhibition, which aims to highlight the talent of artists in and around the West Texas region. Juror Georgina Ngozi, Executive Director of the Greater Denton Arts Council, reviewed more than 170 works of art for this exhibition. Winners were announced online, and the exhibition may be seen in person through August 9th. The closing reception will be August 6th. Current OC photo student Christy Cummins had two works accepted and won an honorable mention award. Recent OC student graduates Marina Alvarez and Thompson have works accepted in the exhibition. Daniel Sorensen, assistant professor of art, has two works accepted, and Professor Steve Goff has one photograph in the show, information from OC states. Mahoney and Thompson also will have photos in the community gallery at City Hall in Odessa. Mahoney said she has taken thousands of photos since she was a younger, but didn't begin a formal education in the art until the last few years. The majority of my classes were either with Steve Goff or Kirk Williams, and they're both incredible instructors, said Mahoney, who retired from teaching with Ector County ISD 2 years ago. She said she would describe herself as a documentary-style photographer, and I like to create images that celebrate people, cultures, landscapes, really of the world, Mahoney said. Most of her photos are digital, but she does like film as well. Digital is convenient because you don't need to process them in a lab. I was thrilled, Mahoney said, of having her photos accepted for the exhibit. It's always very rewarding to have those accepted into various shows. She said the instructors at OC give a lot of creative assignments, and she has learned new techniques and new ways of looking at things, plus how to edit and print. It's a skill to print color images correctly, and Steve is a master. I thoroughly enjoyed the expressive classes, which are alternative process cyanotypes, platinum, palladium prints, salt prints. I really enjoy that kind of work as well, Mahoney said. Before she retired, Mahoney said she would take evening classes, but retirement has given her more time to take classes and just to take photos. I've done a lot on my own, but it's nice to have some formal instruction as well, because now you can find so many tutorials on the internet for how to do things. But it's not just the same as having someone right there looking at your photo and working through the process, Mahoney said. There is a lot to creating a really nice image. Thompson started at OC in 1979 and was there for about a year for photography. Growing up in Hale Center, Thompson was the high school yearbook photographer. That's how I got the interest in all that. Being a yearbook photographer for a small school in Texas, you pretty much do everything. I photographed all the groups, special events, pretty much everything. I worked in Illinois and also in Missouri for a company, and the difference in those two states and Texas is they would hire professional photographers to come in and photograph their yearbook pictures. In Texas, that's part of the curriculum, Thompson said. He added that he thinks being accepted to exhibits like the Texas Photographic Society is great. This kind of stuff is fantastic, not only for the new kids who are starting their careers, but also us old folks who still have an interest in photography, Thompson said. The good part about it is they don't know how old you are or your experience process. It's just the image and the work they put up. It's great, and we've got a real good showing from OC for this contest, and also a lot of other contests going on. It's one of the best programs I've ever been involved with. With all the competition in the photography world, Thompson said he credits Goff for getting the students involved in competing, but OC also keeps it fun. Thompson worked in the photography industry for many years. He was with Life Touch when he retired. I was in St. Louis at the time, and we had five studios. I was the director of photography for five studios and 20 photographers. We photographed 20,000 high school seniors for St. Louis and the surrounding areas, and also Illinois. So back then, it was film-based. We were there for that transition from film into digital. So that's kind of what I grew up with, Thompson said. He added that Goff and his fellow instructors still teach the basics so students can understand light and how to work the camera. Garcia said she has had a camera since childhood when she would get the wind-up kind at 7-Eleven. I would get those and take pictures of anything. I didn't become serious about it until maybe last year, she said. Garcia said she knew a couple of peers who attended Odessa College, and she liked the small, close-knit community for her first college experience. I wanted to take baby steps into it, which to me, I think it was a good choice because I've really enjoyed my time there and building that community, she added. Garcia said, you never know what's going to get chosen for a contest. I was extremely honored. It's kind of nice to have that reassurance in your work and that other people want to see it and like it as well. I know I did a college piece for that. That's kind of like my favorite medium to work with, she added. Collage photography is Garcia's favorite medium to work in. She likes to buy magazines with old photos, and if an image speaks to her, she will carefully cut it out and create her own work from it. For Goff's part, he's like a proud father. I'm really proud when people get recognized and get into shows and get to elevate their work, because a lot of times we don't get the framework. We produce work and critique it in classes, but taking that next step where we put it in a frame, put glass on it, and sign it, and knowing that somebody has recognized the work as being special in relationship to the subject matter of the show or the technique, especially other than a teacher recognizing their merits, is a big boost to confidence. And I'm so excited. I always get excited for them when they have works accepted in other shows by other jurors, Goff said. It's very satisfying that people are applying what they were taught and things that I was able to share and help them grow and learn, and now they're doing it and loving it, he added. Acosta has photos in the City Art Gallery show this year and was accepted last year. He also is in the Texas Photographic Society show and the Ellen Noel Art Museum. He is waiting to hear back on the Texas Photographic Society members only show and will have three works in the Dallas Metro Arts Contemporary show in Plano. He finished third in the TPS show and earned an honorable mention in the Ellen Noel show. Acosta said he took a photography class as part of his journalism degree from UTPB when he was 19. His teacher was Nelson Schott, owner of Schott's Photography. Acosta said he took photos at his first job with the Monahans News, but when he moved to the Midland Reporter-Telegram, there were photographers, so he didn't have to, but he kept doing photography as a hobby. At the time Acosta went to college, all photos were taken with film, but almost immediately after he graduated, everything went digital. He got a digital camera as a gift from someone, taught himself Photoshop, and brushed up on taking photos. To learn to use the camera, he purchased an online book and took about 7 months to go through it. He started taking photos again at a quinceañera when the photographer didn't show up. I'm coming on 6 years where I've been at it at a professional level, and I have just kind of gravitated toward the kind of photography that's in line with my hobbies. I like to be outside. I like to hike. I like to camp. I like to go places where people don't go. I'm able to get photographs that a lot of people can't get because they're not willing to go where I go or sleep outside for several nights to try to get a picture, Acosta said. His work also can be seen on traffic boxes in West County Road and 2nd Street in Odessa. He said he took photos of desert flowers and cacti, converted them into black and white sketch drawings in Photoshop, and then painted the color back in. Acosta said he was honored and humbled to be part of the shows he's gotten into. They're all juried shows. It means a lot, he said. Hope for the Heart. Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas, in Midland, is offering Hope for the Heart Grief Support Group from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Tuesdays, July 7th through August 11th. This free six-week series of classes offers encouragement, education, and an opportunity to share your stories, struggles, and successes in a safe, compassionate place. Groups are co-led by Mike Butts, Support Services Coordinator, and Pam Smith, a licensed professional counselor and professional volunteer. An RSVP is required in advance due to adherence to CDC recommended guidelines for social distancing. Upon entry, participants will be screened for a temperature. Hand sanitizer and masks will be available. To RSVP or for more information, contact Mike Butts at jbutts@hospiceofmidland.org or phone 682-2855. Visit tinyurl.com/YAUSTBD7.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, July 6th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Experts Discuss Virus Impact on Rural Hospitals, by Mella McEwen. The economic pain being inflicted by the pandemic is being felt not only by every business around the globe, but by medical professionals and hospitals treating coronavirus patients. The irony to me is that a medical illness that has created a lot of economic struggle within the practice of medicine, said Dr. Tim Benton with the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center of the Permian Basin, during a recent webinar dealing with the impact of both low oil prices and the pandemic on rural hospitals. Benton said slowdown in patient volumes led to decreased revenues and increased strain on physicians and their practices. Tom Banning, head of the Texas Academy of Family Physicians, called stay-at-home orders a gut punch to practices around the country, leading to an estimated 60-70% drop in office visits, which corresponded to a 60-70% drop in revenues. John Henderson, Chief Executive Officer of Texas Organization for Rural and Community Health, said that rural hospitals, classified as those serving counties with a population of 60,000 or less, were in financial trouble before the pandemic. About 44% reported negative finances, and 27 closed since 2010, he said. Rural hospitals during the pandemic have been stretched either because they have struggled with PPE and have trouble with staffing and equipment, he said. Banning also said the pandemic quickly revealed a broken supply chain for critical personal protective equipment. Most primary care physicians, and I would suggest most rural hospitals, don't stock up on things they're not going to use, Banning said. Family physicians, certainly in rural areas, don't need massive amounts of N95 masks or gowns or gloves or other protective gear. It became apparent very quickly our PPE supply chain was broken. We rely heavily on China to bring in supplies, and that was the choke point, because that's where the virus originated. If there's a positive to the situation, Benton said, it has been increased use of telemedicine, as regulations that have hindered telemedicine's adoption have been relaxed. I hope looking into the future that relaxation of regulations will stay. We need help from regulatory and legislative bodies to relax restraints on telemedicine, he said. Telemedicine doesn't reimburse as well, so that's another consideration. Mike Miller with the Permian Basin Petroleum Association's New Mexico office said that access to bandwidth in rural communities could be a barrier to increased telemedicine. There's not the bandwidth to support the functions of telemedicine, he said. Some places have 3G on their phones. You'd run into problems in southern Lee County with access to bandwidth. We're here on Zoom and have the bandwidth to carry it out. There are places in rural southeast New Mexico that don't have electricity. Benton said he has been working with the Permian Strategic Partnership to boost broadband access and is working to develop telemedicine networks across the region. Besides telemedicine, Benton said he hopes the pandemic will highlight the value of public health and population health. The crisis has underscored the need for more primary care and family physicians who provide the majority of rural health care. Midland alone is short 40 such physicians, he said, and he hopes the pandemic will drive efforts to train and retain such physicians. Banning said he hopes that despite the expected revenue shortfall the state is facing, the Texas legislature next year will continue the grants that send doctors in training to rural areas and pay off their student debt. Healthcare workers are undeniably the heroes in this with their courage and selflessness on display daily, even as they struggle to keep safe with gloves and gowns and masks, Henderson said. Even though healthcare workers have done an admirable job, the system hasn't performed as well, he said. We spend $4 trillion a year on healthcare. We deserve better. The webinar was presented by Grant Schwartzwelder, president and owner of OTA Compression LLC, OTA Environmental, and Chimark, and the Permian Basin Petroleum Association. This article is entitled Midland Memorial Hospital Scales Back on Some Elective Surgeries by Caitlin Randall. Midland Memorial Hospital is scaling back on elective surgeries that require multiple days of inpatient post-surgery recovery in response to a spike in the number of coronavirus patients requiring hospitalization, CEO Russell Myers said Thursday. Surgeons have been asked not to schedule elective surgeries that need multiple days of recovery in an inpatient environment, Myers said. He said some of those surgeries will begin being scheduled again next week, but they will be evaluating what number of surgeries is appropriate to do. Some examples of surgeries that require multiple days to recoup in the hospital are colon resections, bariatric weight loss surgeries, and spinal surgeries, he said. Emergency surgeries will not be affected. There is some concern among hospital officials that elective surgeries may have to be limited further or canceled if staff need to be diverted to treat coronavirus patients, Meyer said. Elective procedures could also be canceled if the hospital is not able to maintain their supply of personal protective equipment, though Meyer said he believes that scenario is unlikely. This article is entitled Peyton on Mask Mandate, Police Will Be Prioritizing Calls, by Stuart Doreen. Police will not seek those residents not following the governor's mask mandate, but will continue to address matters of public safety through prioritized assessment, according to Midland's Mayor Patrick Peyton. Peyton said Friday he will not be asking our police department to respond to calls reporting individuals in violation of this executive order. The comments made Friday were part of a statement that was the latest in the disagreement between Peyton and Governor Greg Abbott following the governor's latest restrictions and mask mandate. Peyton said Abbott should, quote, not continue in this pattern of executive fiat over the entire state without legislative checks and balances, unquote. The city of Odessa also sent out a press statement Friday saying its police department will not actively be looking for people not wearing masks. OPD will evaluate violations of the statewide mask mandate. However, they will be prioritized with all other calls for service, according to the City of Odessa. The more serious calls for service will be given priority, as is customary. That will not change. When responding to a statewide mask mandate violation, OPD will follow the governor's executive order and start by issuing a verbal or written warning. Peyton's statement included that Midland Police Department will not be, quote, chasing reports of people in violation of the mask requirement, unquote, as there will be multiple unenforceable scenarios and exceptions and circumstances that make this mask mandate unenforceable throughout the city. I will fully expect our police to pursue any calls related to a threatening or violent situation towards any individual arising out of the application of the government's mask mandate, Peyton stated in an email Friday. As always, police will continue to address matters of public safety through prioritized assessment. The Reporter-Telegram attempted to contact the police department on Friday about the mask mandate. Abbott's executive order on Thursday, having to do with face coverings, calls for a verbal or written warning for a first-time violator. A person's second violation shall be punished by a fine not to exceed $250. Each subsequent violation shall be punishable by a fine not to exceed $250 per violation. The executive order hereby prohibits confinement in jail as a penalty for the violation of the face covering order by any jurisdiction. Each and every one of us know what we can and should do in this moment of health crisis, and we should do our best to honor the lives and health of all those around us through personal application of masks in public places for the next few weeks, Peyton stated in the email. This is not new to us, and I have already requested these actions from our great city and her residents. The face covering requirement does not apply to a person younger than 10 years of age, with a medical condition or disability that prevents wearing a face covering, who is consuming food or drink, or is seated at a restaurant to eat or drink, engaging outdoors, exercising outdoors, or engaging in physical activity outdoors and maintaining a safe distance from the other people not in the same household, who is driving alone or with passengers who are part of the same household as the driver, obtaining a service that requires temporary removal of the face covering for security surveillance, screening, or a need for specific access to the face, such as while visiting a bank or while obtaining a personal care service involving the face, but only to the extent necessary for temporary removal, swimming in a pool, lake, or similar body of water, who is voting, assisting a voter, serving as a polling watcher, or actively administering an election, but wearing a face covering is strongly encouraged, who is actively providing or obtaining access to religious worship, but wearing a face covering is strongly encouraged, giving a speech for a broadcast or to an audience.
COVID-19 news. By the numbers. Editor's note, Ector County has not updated COVID-19 numbers since Thursday afternoon. Midland County, 772 confirmed, 15 deaths. Texas, 195,239 confirmed, with 2,371,709 tested. Total Texas deaths, 2,637. U.S. cases, 2,841,906 total confirmed, and 129,576 deaths. Quick hits. After school care. This fall, Campfire will be offering a state-licensed school care for students on 10 Odessa campuses: Austin, Burnett, Gonzales, Knoll, Pease, Buis, Cameron, Ross, Burleson, and Jordan Elementary School. Children must attend the school offering the Kids Care program to be eligible. Registration will begin at 9 a.m. July 13th and will continue until all spots are filled. The after-school programs are operated by Campfire West Texas, and components of the program include homework help, games, arts and crafts, outdoor recreation, and traditional campfire activities and projects. The program will be offered from the time school is out through 6 p.m. Enrollment will be limited with the child-to-adult ratio of no more than 15 to 1 to provide attention and quality supervision. To register for Kids Care, complete an online registration form and pay a $20 annual fee for each child enrolled. A weekly $50 fee will be charged per child, and financial assistance is available for those who qualify. Online registration forms are only available at www.campfirewtx.org. For more information, call Campfire West Texas at 570-4144. External Counterpulsation. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach, published Friday, July 3rd. Dear Dr. Roach, I had two cardiac bypasses 30 years ago. The surgeon said the bypasses were good for about 10 years. As predicted, I began to have a little angina about 10 years after the surgery. About that time, I had read an article about external counterpulsation, but my cardiologist totally dismissed it. So I reasoned a way to get more blood to my heart. For 20 years, I have spent 3 to 4 hours per week lying on the sofa with my feet elevated about 45 degrees. I'm 87 years old and enjoy almost perfect health. What do you think? Answer. External counterpulsation has never caught on, despite the fact it was shown effective at decreasing angina and the need for nitroglycerin. It works by using cuffs on the calves, thighs, and pelvis and squeezing them in time to the person's EKG. This reduces the amount of work the heart needs to do and provides a bit more blood flow to the heart. It also stimulates new blood vessels. But the exact mechanism of how it works remains a bit mysterious. Raising your legs increases the return to the heart through the veins. Since it is working on the vein side, not the artery side, where external counterpulsation is thought to work, it is not working the same way as ECP. I can't argue about your results, though. Being 87 and in almost perfect health is remarkable. I often discuss the value of exercise in older people, but maybe rest is important as well. Beta blockers work with other meds. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach, published Saturday, July 4th. Dear Dr. Roach, I am 80 years old. 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with hyperthyroidism. I am taking methimazole, 10 milligrams, 2 tabs daily. Whenever the endocrinologist reduces the tablets to once daily, my TSH remains low. I am also taking metoprolol. I read on my computer that beta blockers interfere with the absorption of methimazole. Should I take a different medication? Answer. Hyperthyroidism is when the thyroid gland releases too much hormone into the blood. This may cause many symptoms such as fast heart rate, tremor, anxiety, weight loss, excess bowel movements, and shortness of breath. Methimazole blocks the synthesis of the thyroid hormone, but often beta blockers such as metoprolol are also used to treat some symptoms, especially the fast heart rate, anxiety, and tremor. Beta blockers work quickly and are usually prescribed as soon as hyperthyroidism is diagnosed. Since they are so often used together, I was surprised to hear you read beta blockers block absorption of methimazole. Nothing in medical literature supports that. It is true that once a person has gone from hyperthyroid to normal thyroid, the body can absorb metoprolol better, so the dose may need to be decreased. TSH is thyroid stimulating hormone, the body's signal to release thyroid hormone. In people with hyperthyroidism, due to a problem with the gland, Graves' disease, and autoimmune thyroid disease, the TSH level is very low. More methimazole would be expected to raise the TSH, while decreasing the dose should make TSH lower. Dear Abby, for Monday, July 6th, 2020. Ex-wife balks at inviting other woman to son's graduation. Dear Abby, my husband of nearly 22 years and I divorced last year after he told me he didn't want to be married anymore and didn't know if he ever loved me. Since our split, he has bought a home with another woman, the same woman I suspected him of having an affair with, and the same woman he encouraged me to befriend during our marriage. I even took her on a trip to Europe. Our son is graduating from high school. We are planning a belated, socially distanced graduation party for my son, and my ex wants to bring her. My challenge is that I am with someone new as well, but he is someone who came into my life a couple of months after my ex and I separated. I want him to be at the party, but I don't want her there. I feel our circumstances are quite different. My son is my priority, so I am leaning toward asking my new significant other not to attend, and then asking that she not attend either. I'm still hurt by their actions. What is the protocol here, and what should I do? Proud Mom, moving on. Dear Mom, I understand your hurt feelings, but as you wrote, the party is a celebration of your son's achievement and nothing else. If things turn out as it appears they will, your ex may marry this woman, and she would be, to some extent, in your life when your son marries, starts a family, etc. Sorry. The saving grace through all of this is you have a new partner in your life who can help buffer you. Fortunately, you will be socially distancing, so you won't have to spend much time in her space. While you don't have to welcome this woman with open arms, please observe the social niceties and devote the majority of your time to mingling with the other guests. Dear Abby, I met a man many years ago. Shortly afterward, my husband passed away. I was in a tough spot, and this man came to my rescue. He offered me a place to live, but I refused. After a few months, I started receiving love letters from him. I carefully answered them, telling him I had gotten involved with someone else, but if it didn't work out, I might consider dating him. After about a month, he began showing up at my house. By then, I was living with my new man, Roger. I explained I was in love and he should leave, but he still showed up at my house every couple of months. I was with Roger for 11 years, but after a battle with heart problems, he died. This man showed up while Roger was in a coma. I told him with much anger several times to please stop coming to my house. 2 days after Roger's death, he again showed up. He asked if it was okay to take me on a date now, and I lost it. I ordered him to never come to my door again and told him I would never date him. He has started sending me love letters again. I don't answer them. He still calls or sends angry letters and still comes by asking if I would like to go on a date. Help. Fed Up in Washington. Dear Fed Up, if you have a lawyer, have him or her write the man a formal letter telling him you have tried to politely discourage his attentions and that if he persists in harassing you, he will be reported to the police as a stalker. Then follow through by filing a report with the authorities. P.S. If your home is not equipped with a security system, consider installing one. He is creepy. Horoscopes. Happy birthday for Monday, July 6th, 2020. Passionate and magnetic, you draw your desire straight toward you. This year, you do this with a project, and it is fantastically successful. Personally, you do best by keeping it light, but that only comes with time. If single, you may be fixated on someone you can't love. Wait until next year. If attached, you're bound, mind, body, soul, and need the same from your partner. Leo gives fully back. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21st through April 19th, 4 stars. Your career in regard to others is highlighted today. A presentation before a group inspires the confidence of business associates. Do research connected to a particular project. This additional information opens a further window of opportunity. Tonight, write a list of your wishes. Taurus, April 20th through May 20th, 5 stars. Your originality generates more income. Today's aspects make others appreciate you and more inclined to reward you financially. Apply for positions that have promise and potential. Muster the confidence to try to boost your earnings. Tonight, you can do it. Gemini, May 21st through June 20th, 5 stars. Music brings inspiration today. The prospects are very bright for making new connections. This is especially true if you are traveling. Foreign language skills come easily. Creative word usage, Gemini's specialty, will impart a special power over others. Tonight, relax. Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd, 4 stars. Your intuition is on target. There is a sense of fate in the air. Adapt to circumstances. Keep a perspective if love and emotional issues grow complex. Today might bring an important new partnership. Your creativity is enhanced. Tonight, you are in wonderment. Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd. 4 stars. Today highlights your relationships. Brush away illusions regarding love and commitment. A dream offers surprising new insights about a relationship. Others will be especially concerned and helpful. Someone honors and appreciates you. Tonight, dinner with those you love the most. Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd, 3 stars. Today accents your health and well-being. Be aware of how your mindset can affect your wellness. Gather information related to health. Do not let friends offer you foods or beverages you know aren't healthy choices. Tonight, draw up a new exercise regimen. Libra, September 23rd through October 22nd, 5 stars. Your physical magnetism will be especially high today. A passionate, yet sometimes stormy relationship is on the horizon. If already attached, decide carefully what you want to do. But you are promised a genuinely joyful time regarding matters of the heart. Tonight, wow! Scorpio, October 23rd through November 21st, 3 stars. Today accents your home and family life. Family members are unpredictable and the home requires maintenance. Do a sage clearing to protect your dwelling space. See the energy lift right after you do this. Tonight, get a good night's sleep. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st, 5 stars. You have a touch of spring fever and will not be able to keep still for long. Today brings numerous short, enjoyable journeys. Promote ideas and make suggestions to those around you. Your clever use of words will make a fantastic impression. Tonight, up late. Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th, 2 stars. It is time to conserve on expenses. There might be temporary tension with a loved one about finances. Do not indulge in hurtful words if money management becomes frustrating. Remember what is really important and be patient when working with expenses. Tonight, relax. Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th, 5 stars. You are a brilliant, independent, humanitarian reformer with a contrary streak. You wake up today with enthusiasm and motivation. Direct your effort into problem solving if annoyance starts to grow. Your energy must be handled with care if it is to do good. Tonight, make amends. Pisces, February 19th through March 20th, 4 stars. Today you need extra rest and a retreat. Your energy will be replenished and you will be able to get organized during hours of peaceful solitude. After this, you will be ready to be more interactive. Tonight, create your own relaxing kind of retreat.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.